Hi, and welcome to this edition of Side Retired, the MLB podcast. It's Dylan, joined alongside James. James is lucky enough to be driving home from college today. I am still stuck here on campus for another 2 weeks, but that's a story for another day. James, we'll get into your happy times. How are you doing right now until we start talking about Rob Manfred and what he's doing to the sport?
I'm in a horrible mood. I was in a great mood until you brought up that name. But yeah, you know, just got about 7 hours left, so just sit back, relax, and bash the man I hate the most.
So we will say we are now officially 4 days into the MLB lockdown. It'll be day five by the time you're listening to this. And we have learned some things that apparently minor league transactions are still allowed. So for people who are interested in depth moves, there are still things that can catch your eye, just as John Duplantier signed with the San Francisco Giants. So there are moves to be made by teams. The Mets are also knee-deep into a manager search that includes names such as Bruce Bochy, Buck Showalter, Brad Ausmus, and we even heard these pipe dreams of Curtis Granderson, although I don't think that's going to happen. But the big story is that Rob Manfred had his first press conference and gave a lot more questions and a lot to be desired. So James, take it away on the whole Rob Manfred issue of baseball.
I mean, he sits up there. It doesn't sound like he cares about the sport. I mean, we've already heard the quotes about the piece of metal. That's what the World Series trophy is. It's just a piece of metal. I mean, it's the World Championship trophy. I think it has a little more meaning than that. Anyways, but I mean, when he gets up there and he blatantly lies, the players have come out and said that there was never a 5 years of service time offer put on the table because the players would have accepted that. That's what the players have been wanting. They want the service time taken down from 7 years to five. And the first thing Manfred does is go out there and be like, oh yeah, we offered them that. They just didn't take it. That wasn't enough for them. Just a blatant lie to try and cover him and the league's ass. And it's not surprising coming from the scum of the earth, Rob Manfred.
And I think another thing that stood out was his quote where he said, he's talked to teams and nobody likes losing players to free agency. That is true. And I guess in a way that like, oh, the Pittsburgh Pirates hate to give away their players, but there's no rule that says they have to give them away. And as a Met fan, free agency is awesome. We just signed Max Scherzer. And I bet if you went to Dodger fans and Yankee fans, yes, you've been inactive this offseason. But if you said we're getting rid of free agency, I doubt there's going to be any team in baseball that's going to say, yes, that's a good idea. We love no free agency.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, I get it. Like, I understand what he's trying to say is that smaller teams like don't like have the money as big teams, but that's just not true. Like, the Pirates were in the playoffs 5 years ago. Like, the Orioles were in the playoffs 5 years ago. The Rays make the playoffs every year now. Like, it's not all about money. Like, if you win, the people will come. Like, do you not remember Camden Yards being sold out like all of 2014 and 2015 and how electric that atmosphere was like in the playoffs and even during the regular season? Like, if you win games, you will sell tickets. The problem is these teams like the Diamondbacks, the Pirates, the Orioles, the Marlins put out a horrible product every year. And then they wonder why no one shows up to their games because no one wants to watch you get your ass kicked every year. Maybe if Manfred put in team salary that they have to, every team has to be above every year, then maybe you would make more money as a team selling tickets, but no one wants to go watch you put a freaking 50-win team out there because who wants to go watch the Orioles lose 14-2 to the Blue Jays and get swept every series? Like, it's ridiculous. Manfred just blames the big teams. He blames the big markets. He blames the players for wanting to make more money. And they're the ones who go out there 162 times a year and put the show on for the fans. And Manfred's like, oh, we need more money. Like, the league needs more money. We need more money. The small teams need more money. Maybe if they would win games like the big teams, then they'd have money. Like, when was the last time the Yankees have had a bad season? And I get it. You could say, oh, they have money. Yeah, because people want to go watch them play because they're good. Same with the Dodgers. Not the Mets. The Mets are bad, but like the Red Sox, the Cubs for a while. I mean, not this past year. They traded everyone away. But like these big market teams have become like they sell out every year. They sell out almost every game every year because they're good. They're competitive, and like if the small market teams would just put a good team out there, they would get more fans and they'd have more money to spend on players. It's not the big team's fault. It's not the player's fault. It's the organization's fault in their refusal to make an attempt to be competitive year in, year out.
And the big problem is I don't think a CBA or anything like that is going to be able to fix it. Even if you have like a floor and you say teams must spend $50 million, they're going to start signing guys just to sign guys. And it's not going to be like all of a sudden the Marlins are going to say, all right, fine, we'll get Correa now. It's going to be, let's find the bargain pieces that'll get us to that $50 million. And it's not going to be able to make them spend in a way that's going to make them competitive. They're going to find ways to extend their young guys, sort of like what we just saw with Wander Franco, which by no means am I saying that was a bad deal from the Rays. In fact, that's actually really good to see the Tampa Bay Rays finally dealing out $180 million to a player of Wander Franco's type. I think this is why Sweeney Murdy sort of hinted at us a couple of weeks ago. This lockdown, buckle up, because this could be a while, because it seems like the players and Manfred are not seeing eye to eye. Neither wants to compromise. I don't even know how you could compromise. I think the easiest subjects to touch upon are probably going to be, do you want the 14-team playoff situation? Do you want universal DH? All those simple topics, which have to get done. Everyone's talking about the revenue and the salary cap and the 5 years of service time and all that stuff. But I'm pretty sure eventually there's going to be a big argument about the DH. There's going to be a big argument about, do we want to expand? There's going to be a big argument about, should the Rays play half their games in Montreal? Because that has to get situated in this whole idea too, because there's a rumor that if MLB says, let's expand, then they're going to get rid of the AL and the NL. And who knows if that actually happens here, or if that's going to be leave the door open for that, because in theory, they could say the CBA is open to expansion without putting that concrete. But who knows if that ends up getting put on the table. And there's a bunch of other rules, 7-inning doubleheaders, 162-game schedule, playoff structure, wild cards, everything you can think about needs to be settled about the future of baseball for the next 5 to 10 years. And there's a lot of things on baseball's plate, and it doesn't seem like they're progressing towards anything at all.
I agree. The thing is when you look at leagues like the NFL, the structure or the money that every team has to be above is like, I think it's like 30 or 40 million below whatever the cap is, which means that you can't get away with just signing those little chip. And I'm not saying like is setting the league minimum for a team, like is $100 million. Like that's not that ridiculous with how much the TV money is. And especially with how much ticket sales would go up for those smaller market teams. If they had that superstar, if they had that player, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like these teams, like the reason no one goes to a Rays game, look at Tropicana Field. It looks like a garbage dump from the outside. Look at where the Oakland A's play. They play on a baseball/football field. Like, these teams that complain about not selling tickets and not having fans and not making money, it's like, look at the product you're putting out in the field every year and look at the place that you're playing in. Like, maybe build a cool new stadium. Maybe build something that in an area where people would actually have interest. Don't build your stadium 45 minutes outside of the major city that you're named after. Like Tropicana Field is, like where the Marlins play, like where the A's play. Like, build your city in downtown. Build your city in a place where people want to go on a nightly basis. Put a product out on the field that's worthwhile and worth watching and is a competitive team every year. But Manfred doesn't address this. He doesn't call out teams. He doesn't call out owners. He doesn't say that teams should try and make the league more competitive instead of seeing the same, 15 teams at the top every year. He calls out everyone else. He says it's the player's fault. It's not the owner's fault. It's not the team's fault that the CBA can't be agreed. It's the player's fault. They should just do whatever the MLB wants, whatever's best for Manfred, whatever makes him the most money.
And All right, we're good. I think also to remember with Manfred is that the commissioner technically works for the owner. So in a way, he's not allowed to bash the owners. But at the same time, where's Steinbrenner? Where's Stevie? Where's Dodgers owner saying, hey, we want to be competitive. We want the other teams to be competitive. We can't have the the owner of the Marlins sort of saying, this is what should happen. The CBA, I'm wondering, I think how this CBA negotiation eventually is going to break down is whether the owners split or whether the players split. And we've never seen the players, MLBPA has never split. Even in the strike of 94, DH issues, steroid era, the CBA or the MLBPA has never split. And I think it's going to be, we're going to get to February probably, and they're not going to be close on anything. And it's going to be, will owners like Steve Cohen, like Hal Steinbrenner say, we need to play baseball, let's work something out and compromise? Or will it be the players who will eventually cave because one of them is going to have to in order for something to be reached?
A deal will be, we will play 162 games this year. A deal will get done. Spring training will happen. It's just both sides being petty right now. And it's really especially Manfred just trying to aggravate the players, like just trying to like just be annoying, be a pest. But both sides know that they can't not have those their full paychecks. You know, they can't get not get that TV money, and the players can't not get their full checks if they didn't receive in COVID. So an agreement will be reached. It'll probably be something very similar, a CBA very similar to the one that we just had over the last 5 or 7 years. It'll probably be the same thing, maybe with a minor tweak of obviously getting rid of the runner on second in extra innings rule. But yeah, I'm sure it'll be a 1 year deal, just something quick, something easy that we can play a full season on, and they can fight all over it again while they play the season, and then 2 months before the lockout would happen again next offseason.
I think another thing to notice is that, and maybe it's just because I'm a Mets fan, so this is on my head, but Max Scherzer's contract pays him around $43 million a year. There are three teams, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Orioles, and the Cleveland Guardians, that entire payroll is less than Scherzer's. Guardians are at $30 million, Orioles are at $30, and then the Pirates are at $34 million. You're going to tell me that you can build an entire 26-man roster that's competitive for less than the Mets are playing one player? It's just, you can't buy that. I mean, the Orioles, name a good player on the Baltimore Orioles that's getting paid. Cedric Mullins is still making league minimum. Currently, their highest paid player is Trey Mancini at $8 million. And there were even talks about non-tendering him. And like, we'll put the non-baseball stuff aside with Trey Mancini. He's a good baseball player who's worth $8 million. For any other team would have gobbled him up for that much. And the fact that there's even a conversation about the Orioles cutting him tells you all you need to know, and that there's a problem with baseball.
Exactly. He's probably worth more than $8 million. And for literally the second worst team in baseball last year to consider cutting a guy that's getting paid less than what he's worth is absurd, and it should not be tolerated. If the sport wants to be competitive, like the NFL this year has been like one of the most competitive seasons there's ever been. Like, there's been so much parity. There's no wins guaranteed this year. Every game has been wild. Like, every week you just have no idea what to expect. And baseball, like, you go into the year and you're like, you already can take out like the bottom 10 teams in the league and be like, they're not going to make the playoffs because they're just like, it's that bad. Like, there's just like obviously the Orioles aren't making an effort. The Pirates aren't making an effort, and the Guardians aren't making an effort. They have no shot. Like, if their payrolls stay where they are, Why should they even play 162 games next year? Like, they're not going to make the playoffs. They don't have a chance.
And you can look at the payrolls for, I'll go even as far as teams 19 through 30 in the MLB payrolls. You've got the Nationals, Rockies, Rays, Royals, A's, Twins, Mariners, Diamondbacks, Marlins, Pirates, Orioles, and Guardians. The Rays, we figured out the Rays somehow managed to make their roster work, even though there's nobody like that looks amazing. They somehow raise ball. And we're at the point where the Rays can do whatever the Rays want to do because they make it work. But all those other teams, the Royals won't compete. The A's are tearing it down. The Twins won't compete. The Diamondbacks, the Marlins. The only team, I guess, is the exception is the Mariners, but that's because they were really low. And as we've seen, they've already gone out. They've acquired Robbie Ray, and it sounds like they're going to get one of Chris Bryant or Trevor Story. So I'll exclude them from the conversation because I could definitely see.
And they traded for it. They traded for, what's his name from the Padres?
Adam Frazier.
Gosh, like Adam Frazier, exactly. Like, what moves have any of those other teams made this offseason? Like, the Rangers. Like, look at the Rangers, for example. Look at them. Like, who knew that the Texas Rangers were suddenly just going to pull $50 million. This, like, obviously it's like 500, it's like half a billion over the next, whatever, 10 years for the two contracts he signed. But they're paying Simeon and Seager combined like $55 million this year. Like, who would have thought? Like, that's the kind of move, like, that's the kind of thing that baseball fans want to see. You want to see a team like the Rangers who, while yet they still spent some money, you know what I mean? Like, they had Lance Lynn, they had Kyle Gibson, they had Joey Gallo. Like, they had some dudes. They weren't the most competitive team, but, you know, they still went out there and they put on a show every night. They had it. They just built a brand new stadium. They're clearly making an effort to be competitive. And, like, they're not the biggest market. They're in Arlington, Texas. Like, I mean, how is a team in, like, Miami not spending a ton of money, or a team in San Francisco up until recently not spending a ton of money? Like, it's great to see a team like the Rangers making an effort financially to be competitive. And I think they will be competitive this year because of the moves they've made so far this offseason.
And another team you can throw in that same area is the Detroit Tigers, who did right before the deadline signed Javier Baez, who, if you want to talk about a player that attracts fans and is flashy for the eye, yes, as a Mets fan, I've seen him up and close, and there are things that you can be like shaking your head about, and Javier Baez with the whole thumbs down and the craziness that ensued about him becoming Lindor's best friend and there being a divide in the clubhouse and everything to do with the negative of Javier Baez. He is an electric player. He's going to sell jerseys. Detroit Tigers fans are going to love getting to see Javier Baez 81 times a year at their home ballpark. And it's also interesting, the Tigers buying this offseason with Javier Baez and Eduardo Rodriguez, to name a couple of the moves they've done, coincides with the, I guess, Miguel Cabrera stardom wearing down. There's always been people want to see Miguel Cabrera because, A, he was really good, so he attracted a bunch of people to come watch the games. But he was also, the past couple of years, there was the chase for 500 home runs. He's 13 hits away from 3,000. So I think the past couple of seasons, they've been able to sell tickets of come see the great Miguel Cabrera. He's sort of reaching the end of the milestone chase, and he'll probably hit his 3,000th hit early in April. So they need to find another way to sell tickets. And Baez and the upcoming of Casey Mize, the Tigers are another one of those teams to watch that are all of a sudden going to become a popular team.
Yeah, I agree. It's great because, I mean, people forget, I mean, just like 9 years ago, the Tigers were in the World Series. They lost to the, I believe it was 2012, correct? They lost to the Giants. Yep. And they had Scherzer, Verlander, Sanchez, Porcello, and who was their fit? And Fister, Doug Fister. I mean, they were a great team 9 years ago. And, you know, they obviously fell off. You know, all those guys left. Didn't they? Oh, they had David Price too, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like, people forget the Tigers were competitive. They used to be considered one of the bigger market teams. So, yeah, you know, I mean, obviously the Miguel Cabrera contract really handicapped them the last couple of years, especially just with how he just hasn't been worth $27.5 million a year, really since the year he signed it. So they've kind of been stuck with that for a little while. And you can understand they've been building back up. They've got some nice young players, some nice young prospects. Spencer Torkelson coming up. Jaimier Candelario had a nice year for them last year. Same with Akil Baddoo. So I think that the Tigers could really make a nice push in that AL Central division next year, especially because the Chicago White Sox have not gotten much better this offseason. And really, the White Sox were not that good last year. So I think that could be very interesting. And again, it's great to see a team like the Tigers go get a superstar like Javier Baez.
I guess a couple of the other moves that happened right before the lockdown that I guess at this point are a little bit of old news, so we'll just briefly touch upon them. Marcus Stroman got paid 3 years, $71 million with the Cubs. He gets 25-25 and opt out, and then can opt in or out of the $21 million remaining on that contract. I guess the Cubs are trying to go for it in a way, but at the same time, this could just be bringing in a good figure like Marcus Stroman. We already saw him interacting with their top pitching prospect, Adbert Alzolay, so maybe they're hoping for something there.
Yeah, I agree. I think Stroman, that's a great – Stroman's obviously a great pitcher. He's going to go out there and start 32 to 34 games for you. He'll go six or seven innings a game. Hopefully the Cubs will let him pitch a little bit longer than the Mets did this past year. But yeah, I think it's a great signing. It's a great innings eater, and he's going to pitch to about the tune of a three, below a three ERA for you. So the Cubs are getting great value for only $25 million for Stroman. Yeah, he'll throw 200 innings for them easily. And if the Cubs are at all competitive, he will definitely be a big reason why.
I think especially having a calming and a pretty sort of stable presence at the top of your rotation definitely helps. Stroman threw 179 innings this last year, led the league in game starts with 34, and everyone's saying, oh, he doesn't go deep into games. There is the fact that he pitched in like a bunch of doubleheader games, a couple of rain-shortened games that threw down his sort of innings per start number. He pitched to a 3.02 ERA. He's been to an All-Star game in 2019, and with the Mets, I know there's a lot of pressure when you have to try and pitch back in your home state. I know Steven Matz probably dealt with a little bit of that towards the end of his Mets career, but Marcus Stroman proved, and he's a New York guy, that he could pitch in front of New York. So it sounds like he can go to a big market like Chicago and do a really good job for them. And it would not surprise me to see Marcus Stroman go out and dominate and do his thing. And he's already getting familiar with some of the Cubs fans on Twitter. I know some people don't like his Twitter presence, but he does a good job of relating with the fans and everything to do with that on Twitter, giving shout outs. And I know there's that video of the Cubs fan who's probably like 5 years old with Stroman written on a marker on his back throwing a strike. So it seems like Cubs fans are really excited for Marcus Stroman, and Marcus Stroman is very excited to be in Chicago. So as a Mets fan, it was definitely sad to see Marcus go. Obviously we did get Max Scherzer, which does help soften the blow for us, but at the same time, Marcus was one of our best pitchers, stepped up when Jacob DeGrom left this season. So good luck to Marcus out in Chicago. A couple other moves that did happen. Dodgers re-signed Chris Taylor. Angels re-signed Raisel Iglesias. Rich Hill is back with the Boston Red Sox. And the Red Sox then literally 20 minutes before the trade deadline buzzer, or I guess the lockdown buzzer, acquired Jackie Bradley Jr. from the Milwaukee Brewers for Hunter Renfro. Are there any moves there that stick out to you from that group?
I mean, the Red Sox must know something that I do not about Hunter Renfro. I mean, he must have committed a crime. He must have done something, because that makes zero sense as to why they would deal Renfro after such a really great productive year for the Red Sox. They haven't made any effort to sign Schwarber back so far. J.D. Martinez, he can't play the outfield anymore. So I'm just really interested as to why they think Jackie Bradley Jr., who hit, I mean, I can't even remember the last time he's even hit above like 230. What do they think he brings that Hunter Renfro does not? Like, I mean, the move made no sense to me at the time. It still really makes no sense to me. But yeah, I guess the Red Sox ownership knows more about Hunter Renfro's criminal history than I do. That could be the only explanation to me.
I think there's got to be a second move on the horizon for them. Otherwise, I doubt there's a criminal history with Hunter Renfro, but at the same time, because they did acquire two prospects in order to take on Jackie Bradley Jr.'s salary, so maybe they see something in those guys, or as you hinted at, maybe Kyle Schwarber reunion now becomes likely, because are you really going to hand over a starting role to Jackie Bradley Jr.? Right now, the outfield is Verdugo, JBJ, and Jaron Duran, because JD Martinez is probably at this point a DH. So there's definitely room for another outfielder. Maybe Nicholas Castellanos fits this team, but at the same time, we've also heard rumors of Correa and Story, but that infield looks pretty stacked already. So if I were the Red Sox, unless Kike Hernandez plays center for them, you could move him out there because he's a really versatile guy, but there definitely needs to be another position player added to make up for the loss of Hunter Renfro's bat. And don't sleep on Hunter Renfro's arm too. I think he led the league
in
outfield assists.
He's a much better defender than people think. And I mean, obviously everyone knows he has that juice and that pop in his bat. So I don't know, I guess the Red Sox know, well, obviously the Red Sox know more about baseball than me, but it just makes very little sense right now.
And I will also say quickly on the Dodgers signing Chris Taylor, that's a move that made a lot of sense. They had lost Seager and they had lost Scherzer. Dodger fans were in a little bit of a panic, but I know Kern, who we've had on the podcast before, is a big Dodger fan, was texting me, oh my God, you stole Scherzer from us. And I was like, don't worry, you're still the Dodgers. You're still going to be completely fine. You have Trevor Bauer returning next year. You have Bellinger's going to bounce back, and Trey Turner's now going to have a full season in LA, and signing Chris Taylor back is definitely a helping, calming presence in left field and second base, however they do there. We will also shout out in that we're not going to pretend to be experts on these guys. We didn't see any of these guys play. In fact, our dads probably didn't even see any of these guys play either, but congrats to Bud Fowler, Gil Hodges, Jim Cott, Minnie Mignoso, Tony Oliva, and Buck O'Neill on being elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. I will say all these guys, from looking at their statistics, they all seem noteworthy and worthy of being in the Hall of Fame, but I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on any of them, except for Gil Hodges did manage the 1969 Mets, and from seeing guys like Ed Cranepool and Art Chamsky giving much appreciated deserve to Gil Hodges, I guess I respect those guys, so I'm going to respect Gil Hodges and say that congrats to him on making the Hall of Fame, but also congrats to the five other guys that were elected as well. I don't know if you have anything else to add. Next week, by the way, we will be doing our Hall of Fame episode with the Baseball Writers of America's ballot. So if you would like, there is definitely a photo online circulating of a blank ballot. You can submit your ballot to us at @SideRetiredPod, DM us to us on Twitter, and we will be including it, because next week, James and I will be giving you our ballots, as well as we will be saying what the fan vote would have said and who we would have elected. I think there's a strong suspicion that there will probably be different results from the fan votes than from the actual votes, because I don't know if you can correct me if I'm wrong, James. I think fans are more lenient on the whole elect Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens steroid group, as opposed to the writers who seemingly hold a grudge on them.
Yeah, I think as we talked about before the show, really interesting to see six guys get elected in before, from off the ballot. So I think we're definitely, as we talked about before, we're definitely looking at a chance that no one gets elected by the writers this year. Because it's not usual that they would stuff six guys in 1 year off the ballot. So yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen. But right now it looks very, very likely that that could be the case.
And unfortunately, our guy Coco Crisp did not make the ballot, which means we're going to have to start campaigning for another guy. And I've already secretly picked out the guy that next week. Well, that's not fair. There's a massive difference between a guy like Bonds. You have to find a hidden guy on the ballot that nobody respects. But don't reveal it. Now you've revealed it. All right. You'll hear more about it next week from us. Our hidden guys that most people don't argue for, that we're going to make our strong cases for. I got my guy. James secretly just revealed his guy. If you make it all the way to the end of the podcast, you know James is a Andy Pettit type of guy. Who knows? Maybe we could have a special guest on with us, or we'll just focus on the fan vote. Whatever, we will see what happens. For now, the lockout will continue to happen. If there's, for some reason, an emergency podcast tips episode, we will be back at some point later this week, which I don't know how you could have an emergency episode in the middle of a lockdown unless something crazy happens. Otherwise, we'll be back early next week discussing the Hall of Fame ballot and potentially the return of Ryan Barry, who is still missing. If there's anybody on the Holy Cross College campus right now and you've heard of a guy named Ryan Barry, please tell him his co-hosts have been searching for him for 2 months now and have not heard from him. And we hope he's not dead, but we're pretty sure he's not. James. Yeah. Pretty sure. Like 99.999% sure, because I feel like I would have heard about it if you was. So I can make that joke. James, unless you have anything else to add.
Nothing else to add besides Barry Bonds Hall of Fame, or else you're not a true baseball fan.
Sounds good. And we will be getting into that more next week. For now, tweet at us at @SideRetiredPod. DMs are always open. We love talking baseball and talking smack and going back and forth with people. So until then, the side is retired.